The very word sat made even hardened Sekhmen recoil. There was no known defense against an orbiting sat, aside from not being there when it cut loose. Of course, Henderson had no proof it really was a sat that destroyed his vill, but that was the word he had chosen to strike terror in their hearts. And who knew? Maybe it was a pre-dark sat. Stranger things had happened.
You saying Nathan Kodor can talk to a sat?
Duquesne looked upward.
I have heard some tall tales before, but this is the best. Kodor doesn't even have a war wag with armor. But you're telling me that now he got a sat?
Yes.
The Baron of Green Coville turned away.
Stop wasting my time. Guards, take his goods and whip him into the forest. Goodbye, Henderson.
And what if I'm right?
Halfway through the gate, Baron Duquesne paused to glance over his shoulder.
Never give up, do you?
And what if I am right? What are you going to do when the top of the vill starts to grow hot? Then the walls soften and melt, the molten stone flowing over your screaming people, burning them into blackened bones. What will you do then? Cry? Apologize? You asshole. You don't deserve to be the Baron of a latrine.
The guards growled hatefully and shifted the grips on their blasters, obviously eager to chill the old man. Baron Duquesne stared hard at the man, standing alone, but unafraid, before the gates of his vill. Henderson was known as a ruthless deviant, a sexual pervert, and worse, a jolt addict. But if his story was true, then the bastard had information vital to the safety of his vill. And what could one lone man do? Slaughter his troops and take over? That was a laugh.
And you can stop the sat, I suppose?
No, but we can kill the man who controls it. With him gone, it's useless.
Kodor has never bothered me. Why should I take your word?
Don't! I could be lying.
Henderson felt the fleeting taste of success on each word. He was close now. So very close.
Send some troops to wreck my vill. When they return, then we can talk about how to save your vill. And my price.
Brilliant. Nobody gave anything away free. He cursed himself a fool for not thinking of that earlier. Duquesne turned and talked with a tall, thin Sekhmen. From the man's lack of hair, clothing, and stance, Henderson guessed he was the Sekh chief. The chief wore a wheel gun and a shoulder rig, and some sort of weird blaster strapped to his thigh. The barrel was enormous, twice the size of a shotgun. The stock was new wood, still green in spots, the barrel bound with iron wire as reinforcement. Henderson knew that trick. Heat the iron red hot, then wrap it tight around a weak blaster barrel. When it cooled, it got tight and helped old blasters work for years longer. That weapon had obviously seen long and hard service. Maybe it launched a rocket, or could be a flare rifle. Henderson once owned a flare pistol. Whatever the thing was, he had no wish to face the business end, and he marked the chief as the first man to die in the revolution.
As the Baron of Green Cove, I always have to consider any potential threats to my people. This could merely be a trick to get inside. If it is, you'll hang from a rope with crows pecking out your eyes until we shoot you out of boredom.
Henderson smiled.
And if what I say is true?
We'll discuss your reward later, inside. Get his horse, take his blasters, and any jolt you find.
Henderson allowed himself to be stripped of all weapons, secretly smiling about the bamboo tube of jolt shoved up his ass, where few Sekhmen dared to search. He was inside. Now for the second part of his plan. Orbiting high above Earth, a beautiful black butterfly floated along peacefully in space. The analogy was quite exact, as the inventor of the microwave kite, Professor Paul Glaser, had collected butterflies as a child and deliberately incorporated the beauty of nature into the orbiting power plant. With a smile, he had always referred to the lovely satellites as monarchs. But the rest of the pre-dark world soon called the feared machines by the hated designation of kites. Miles wide, The graceful wings of the kite were composed of innumerable tiny glass squares, efficient solar cells that converted the raw solar light falling on them into direct current. The trickle of power flowed into superconductor cables, becoming a stream of electricity that was boosted with a step-up transformer into a raging torrent of power that was converted into safe and harmless microwaves to beam down to Earth. Originally, the kite was designed to only emit low-frequency, non-lethal EM waves that would cascade unnoticed to huge fields of rectennas in the deserts and above the junkyards of North America, the specially treated wire catching and condensing the invisible waves of power, easily converting it into simple electricity to run factories and cities. Once established in its orbit, a kite would provide limitless clean power for millions of homes. Most of the kites were destroyed by the Hunter killer sats in the aftermath of Skydark. Only a lone kite remained intact and functioning, floating serenely above the ravaged world. However, the focus of the microwave beamer had been drastically changed under the austere genius of Silas Jamivu. The safeties neutralized, the power grid connected directly to the mighty bus bars, and the EM frequency boosted to its highest setting. Far below the sat, an unseen dish antenna sent coded signals to the machine, and the controls inside the Warsat blinked wildly as new commands flooded its master comp. Tiny retro rockets of elemental boron hissed briefly, subtly changing the direction of the silvery cone at the bottom of the kite. Transformers hummed, its external lights dimmed, and an invisible stiletto of power stabbed through the murky atmosphere, volatilizing the heavy layer of polluted clouds until a strange blue could be seen from the Tennessee Valley below. Birds and scream wings, winging through the sky, burst into flames and plummeted from the deadly air. Smeared with blood and gore, the feasting muties in the Shilohville paused in their gorging to scratch at their skin from the millions of pinpricks stabbing every inch of their bodies. The pain rapidly increased to intolerable levels, and the creatures hooted and snarled in agony, blindly clawing at their dead white eyes. Some tried to run away, others attempted to burrow into the rocky soil, still others sought refuge inside the brick buildings of the Two Legs, but nothing helped. Hair burst into flames, skin cracked open, blood flowed from the seared flesh. Dizzy and dying, unable to even comprehend what was destroying them, the insane muties foamed at the mouth and attacked one another, only to weaken and limply topple over, steam hissing from every orifice as their twisted bodies cooked solid. A clean wind blew over the Militaryville, and the shrieks of the animals were quickly followed by heavy silence. Minutes passed into an hour, then 2 hours before the battered door to the bunker was opened, and a sec man held out a hand, testing the air before daring to leave the safety of the armored room.
All clear.
Yeah, we know. You're still alive.
A scowling Baron Sheffield strode from the bunker, Colette at his side. The base was dotted with chewed corpses, smashed machines, dropped weapons, and countless steaming bodies. A few of the muties twitched feebly on the hot ground, their limbs moving as if possessed with a life of their own. The Blues started shooting the muties, and Colette shouted for them to cease.
Get some sledgehammers! No sense wasting ammo on stationary targets!
Shouldering their long blasters, the weary sec men moved in squads to the Quonset hut to get the required tools. At the door, a lieutenant placed his hand on a glowing pad, and the door slid aside with a hiss of compressed air. Sheffield walked out among the dead.
Shit fire. We lost every slave with this attack. You there, Major! I want that fucking gap filled in with anything that'll fit! Block that hole, or I'll use your corpse! Use a Hummer and get rubble from the quarry to block that hole completely!
The officer saluted and rushed to the task. Overhead, the sky was still a clear blue, but a ring of storm clouds was rushing in, the iris of darkness closing above the walled ville. High in the sky, winged creatures were beginning to circle the Shiloh base, many with enormous wingspans and multiple heads. The smell of the spilled blood and cooked meat drew the aerial scavengers like insects to a searchlight. Sheffield grumbled, lighting a cig.
Bastard kite seems to attract muties. An unforeseen side effect.
Anything we can do about that, my lord?
Colette rested the hot barrel of her blaster against a cheek, savoring the brief sting of pain.
Yeah, stop using it to defend ourselves from simple muties.
Sick Chief Hogan, have the men prepare to leave the base. It's impossible to stay here anymore.